antifaz que tu maldad cubría.
Hello, thank you for joining the Heritage Radio Network. This is At the Root of It with Erin Fitzpatrick on the 27th of October. A rainy day here at Roberta's. We're keeping warm in the studio. I'm going to start today's program with the Week in Wine recap. And in latest news, the U.S. TTB will no longer require the Italian government certification for imports of Brunello di Montalcino to the United States. Italy's Agriculture Ministry, the previous requirement for government certification, was announced last June 2008 as a result of the alleged scandal that producers of Brunello had adulterated their wines by adding unauthorized grape varieties, as Brunello must be produced using 100% Sangiovese grapes. Brunello is now one of the wine ambassadors of Made in Italy products and is now assured its presence in the American market. And a new California AVA has been established called Happy Canyon, and it's the smallest appellation to date at only 225 hectares of vines distributed amongst 8 vineyards. It's located in Santa Barbara's Santa Ynez Valley AVA and the vast Central Coast AVA. Happy Canyon is most suited to planting of Bordeaux varietals and has green serpentine soils rich in magnesium. Vogelsang Vineyards is one of the vineyards from this AVA gaining recognition. Its 08 Sauvignon Blanc received 94 points from the Wine Spectator. So some wines to look out from that new AVA, Happy Canyon. And in the crop report, it's been reported from the National Association of Growers, Italy's 09 vintage is generally very good, but output will be lower than expected because of unusually hot weather followed by torrential rain. Total production is estimated at 44.5 million hectoliters, 4% lower than forecasted, compared with 46.3 million in 2008. The 2009 production is generally excellent quality, especially in the center and the north, but clearly a drop in quantity. And in the market feed, two complete sets of Penfolds Grange are to be auctioned on November 5th in Hong Kong. A pre-auction estimate of up to 1.8 5 million Hong Kong dollars, or about 240,000 US dollars, has been set for a Grange vertical from 1951 to 2004 of 750 milliliter bottles. Estimates are higher than recent auction results because Hong Kong is proving to be a much bigger market with more liquidity. We are going to take a short break and be back with my guest this afternoon, Tracy Ellen Kamens, co-owner and chief education officer of Grand Cru Classes. So we'll be right back, and this is Lady Hawk with Paris is Burning. All of the boys and the girls here in Paris sing to the night with outside, but with madness. I can't keep up, I'm a wreck, but I want it. Tell me the truth, is it love or just Paris? All of the boys and the girls here in Paris sing to the night with outside, but with madness. Truth is it love or just Paris? Welcome back to At the Root of It on the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. And a thank you to our sponsor this afternoon, TechServe. Again, thank you so much for your support, our Mac specialist friends on West 23rd Street. And for our listeners who are joining just now, please call in if you have any questions at 718-497-2128. Today we're going to talk about how wine ages, and I'd like to introduce my guest this afternoon, Tracy Ellen Kamens. Thank you for joining us, Tracy.
My pleasure. I'm delighted to be here.
So as I mentioned just before the break, Tracy is a co-owner and chief education officer of Grand Cru Classes, which specializes in tailored wine events and education. So for our listeners, if you'd like to, in your front of a computer, want to look up grandcruclasses.com, I'll give you a bit more information as to what Tracy does on a day-to-day. So would you like to just segue into the segment by mentioning we are going to talk about a class that you specialize in your program called, what exactly?
It's called From Mystery to Mastery, and we emphasize all of the different structural elements of wine so people can really understand what they're tasting.
Great. So it's a one-time course?
Yeah, it's a two-hour class, and what we do that's unique to from our other classes is we start with a very generic base wine so people can understand what they're tasting is just a very plain wine, but then we give them doctored samples. So the first sample is one that to which additional sugar has been added. The second has additional tartaric acid. The third has tannin powder. And then the fourth has vodka added to it. So the participants can really taste, since the base wine itself it remains the same from sample to sample, they can really be focusing in on that one structural element in each case. So they could really understand where that hits them on their palate and even just what that sensation or taste is like.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So who are coming to these classes? I mean, I know your background, we were speaking before the show, your background's in education.
Mm-hmm.
And you got into wine how long ago?
I've been in wine for a little over 4 years now.
Great. So you just kind of took it up as a passion and really made it into a business.
Absolutely. As I was mentioning to you earlier, that I've been in higher education, and so my real passion is teaching, but discovered that I really love wine, and so to be able to blend the two has been just a wonderful opportunity for me to really share my knowledge with other people.
And do you find that a lot of people are coming to the courses, this one in particular, because I find that we haven't spoken about really aging and how wine ages in the bottle and the different components of barrel aging and bottle aging and all those things. Do people have a big curiosity and unfamiliarity with the understanding the process?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the average consumer walks into a wine store or looks at a wine list and is just baffled by the array of choices and doesn't necessarily understand what all of those different choices mean beyond just the marketing and different labels. So, you know, to be able to really educate him or her to really understand what they're tasting in the glass and then how that can translate to other wines that they're tasting, you know, I think people really do want to have that knowledge. It's not that they necessarily everyone has to be a wine expert, but just to even be able to appreciate what's in your glass today and why that differs from what was in your glass yesterday or last week or is going to be in your glass in a couple months from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Last week we had Nicholas Palazzi on, who's a cognac expert, and one of the statements he made was that older is not always better. And I think that there is sometimes the assumption that if you're going to buy something that's older or it's a, you know, a great vintage from the past, and you're willing to spend more money on it, but it could be there be a number of factors which make it not as good as something that might be younger. So it's interesting to go through, as we will going forward, to look at each one of those elements which make up.
Sure. I mean, and on that point as well, a lot of consumers I've discovered in teaching this class and just speaking with consumers in other classes, they don't always think, they don't even know that sometimes the older vintages can be better. They kind of think of the vintage date as the same way they'd look at cottage cheese or milk, and they think that they want to make sure they're buying the freshest wine and not understanding why that may not always be the best choice for them. So
sure, it goes both ways.
It's interesting.
Then. Yeah.
So, you know, definitely by, you know, understanding how those different elements interact and how they change over time can also help them understand which wines they might want to purchase at a younger age versus which wines they would want to either lay down themselves or purchase at an older vintage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that we'll go into just the different breakdowns which make up wine in general, which give it a greater capacity to age.
Certainly.
Yeah, if that's okay?
Absolutely. So as I said, with the component tasting, the first element that we start with is sweetness, and gives people the opportunity to really understand what that additional sugar tastes like in wine. And of course, most wines are generally dry or maybe slightly off dry, but mostly are dry wines. But the more sugar that a wine has generally will give it more ageability. It kind of can act sometimes as a preservative in one sense, but also just also will, that sugar level will remain the same and won't diminish over time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then generally giving them the opportunity to taste not just the samples, but then of course tasting a dry wine and a sweet wine from the same grape variety to really understand how that plays out and whether it's, you know, maybe a late harvest or a botrytized wine or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And particularly those kinds of wines will have very longevity in terms of their aging process.
But they have to be balanced by a number of other factors.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. And that brings us, of course, to the next, which is acidity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell people, you know, to imagine biting into a lemon, which I know you mentioned earlier, and that certainly is, even without the lemon in front of you, your mouth starts to water.
Right.
And to be able to get that sensation and then see how the wine does the same thing in your mouth, I think is very important. So, of course, as I said, the next sample would be acidity, and they can start to see where they're feeling that on the tongue, generally on the sides. But the other play that the way that they certainly play in is certainly that without that acidity, the sweetness of the wine is going to definitely come across as flat or flabby.
Mm-hmm.
And the example I often use is soda, something people are obviously familiar with and has some sweetness to it. And unfortunately, a lot of us are, you know, on occasion you have a glass of flat soda.
Not pleasant.
Exactly. But people can relate to all of a sudden that soda is now overly cloying and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the sweetness level of this of the soda didn't change just by virtue of losing its carbon dioxide. But the carbonation really helped to balance the sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
So that the beverage was enjoyable when it was there. And acidity does the same thing. They play in harmony.
Sure.
And so...
Well, that's an interesting example, though. Yeah.
Thank you. So by having that acidity there to balance out the sweetness, it really allows the wine to still have freshness and to really be a pleasant experience, despite a wine that might have excessive sugar, but it still, you know, comes across on the palate as very pleasant because of that acidity that's balancing it there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So certainly those two definitely play together, if you will, in terms of their structural elements. The next, I think people definitely have less familiarity until they start to really look into wine is tannin. And we use a tannin powder that they can then start to taste that. And certainly we're using a white baseline, so there's no tannin there
mm-hmm.
to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And they can start to see how that astringency really affects the wine. And I think the way that people can be most, to can most understand tannin is to think about something they might be more familiar with, such as tea.
Right.
And frequently we often will leave the tea bag in too long.
Sure.
And then people can really relate to that example in terms
of... Very drying.
That drying sensation, mm-hmm. the astringency, the bitterness, and similarly the... quality of tannin that's found in the grape skins is the same tannin compound that's in rhubarb and tea and other that's just naturally occurring compound. So, and I think the structure of tannin is something that definitely plays into aging, probably even more so than all the other elements.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's one of the things that people think about most when they think about aging is tannin. And just to back up for a second to introduce exactly what tannins are, phenolic plant compounds, which are bitter
right.
and
mm-hmm.
also astringent. I think
yes.
there's two components of tannins, but most spoken about in terms of familiarity, I think, from not people use that word a lot, but I don't think they understand what tannins actually are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
right.
how they play into being able to help a wine age further.
Right. So, I mean, when people are obviously enjoying a glass of wine, and it's going to be, of course, more in red wines because the tannins are in the skins and the white wines don't really have that contact with the skin, so they don't generally have any tannin in them. So it's really, you know, referring to tannic wines, referring to red wines, but that, as we said, that bitter quality and the astringency in when it's balanced by the other elements can be very favorable and pleasant, even though on the face of it, the word bitter doesn't sound very pleasant, but, you know, it can add a nice complexity to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly wines that are young, the tannin structure will be much more pronounced than when the wine ages. And in a lot of cases, the tannins can be too firm and too drying and astringent that it's not a pleasant experience. But over time, those tannins will soften and really develop more that the person can really enjoy that wine as it becomes older and a lot and just less drying and bitter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's like one thing I think is important to recognize is that tannins are found, as you mentioned, in the grape skins and then the stems, as well as in oak. So you're looking at the components of tannins in both of these,
right,
which often mm-hmm. can lead or lend itself to a different expression. So, for instance, Dolcetto, a very, you know, tannic grape variety, which obviously oftentimes is not a factor of oak as much as it is of the actual skin of the grape,
right,
often tends to be very drying and very tannic up front. And it's a hard wine, I think, for people to take to if they're unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, like you said, it really depends on the grape variety itself. Some that have thicker skins or such as Cabernet Sauvignon, which is not just the thicker skins, but also mm-hmm. a small berry. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of tannin there in terms of the surface, ratio of the skins,
sure,
with the juice. So
mm-hmm.
definitely a very tannic wine. And I think the other thing to mention too is that, you know, tannin reacts with protein. And so that's why those wines will go so well with meat. It's not so much, you know, I think people always think, oh, red wines and red meat. And it's not, there's not anything wrong with that, but it's much more scientific in the fact,
sure,
of how it's really reacting
mm-hmm.
with the
mm-hmm.
protein. And so that can also help soften the tannins in terms of enjoying the wine at the time. But again, sometimes it can be just too tannic and you need to let the wine age.
Sure. And then the last component, we have sweetness,
yes,
acidity, tannin, and
alcohol.
Yeah.
So as I said, in that case, we put the vodka in. It's not the most... It's not a full way to tell, but it's a good way to start. And the alcohol will change the sample in both giving a little bit more body to the wine, a little bit more perception of sweetness, even though you're not adding any sugar, and, of course, the heat. And, you know, some wines can be very high in alcohol, but the alcohol can be balanced.
Right.
And other times the label says that the alcohol is not particularly high, but it's sticking out. And if you get that burn at the back of your throat,
mm-hmm.
That's the alcohol sticking out. For whatever reason, it just wasn't, the wine just wasn't made as well as it could have been. I've had a 17% alcohol still wine, not a fortified wine.
From where?
From Martinelli in Sonoma.
Sure.
It was in Zinfandel.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And, you know, definitely full body, definitely great wine. But the alcohol, you know, we knew that it was 17%, but you didn't taste it on the palate. It was very seamless. You probably would have noticed the alcohol if you had a whole glass and then you stood up.
Right.
But
so that's a testament to the wine being made well with all these other components kept in check.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. So that's the introduction to the class.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is really an interesting way to do it, so that you're really using your own senses to feel these different components.
Right.
Come
yeah.
through.
And again, it's, you know, especially if it's unfamiliar to you, to be able to really highlight one at a time is helpful, because when you go to taste a regular glass of wine, now you've got everything going on at once, and it's once you've had that opportunity, it makes it easier to pick out the individual structural elements if you know, now that you've done it one by one.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we're going to speak a little bit more about this and bottle aging and oak aging and how that affects the wine after our break. Thanks again. This is At the Root of It with Aaron Fitzpatrick.
Welcome to the future. Find me a nice soft place to land. Today, which means you're on time delay. So even if I slow it down, my sound is fast forward. Hold up, I'm just a runway show, but I wear this on my plane, even runway clothes. Cashmere sweats, they come out next year, but these my last year sweats. And my hoe's so sick, your new chick can't fuck with my old bitch. And you know this shit, I'm professional, they know this, sis. I just may let you borrow this. This the blueprint, nigga, follow this. This what tomorrow is. Welcome to tomorrow, bitch.
Whatever you about to discover, we all fed. You about to tell her you love her, we all fed. Always wanna fight in a club, and we all fed. But you can't bring that future back. Y'all are steady chasing the fame, and we all fed. Oversized clothes and chains, we all fed. Niggas still making it rain, and we all fed. Cause you can't bring the future back.
Tell them niggas get off me. Chris, we all fed. Tim's, we all fed. Brim's, we all fed.
Yeah, we all fed. Is you still on that? And we still making money, cause we still on that. Same black versus white, my nigga, we all fed. Please tell Bill O'Reilly to fall back. Tell Rush Limbaugh to get off my balls. In 2010, I 1864. Yeah, we come so far. So I drive around town, hard top in the saw. In my Tribeca love with my highbrow art and my high yellow bra. In my dark skin sense and my best white mix. Say what's up to Chris. How's that for a mix? Got a black president, got green presidents. Blueprints in my white iPod. Black diamonds in my Jesus piece. My God. Tripping off that, this a Benetton ad, nigga been up off that.
Whatever you about to discover, we all fed. You about to tell her you love her, we all fed. Always wanna fight in a club, and we all fed. But you can't bring the future back. Y'all are steady chasing the fame, and we all fed. Oversized clothes and chains, we all fed. Niggas still making it rain, and we all fed. Cause you can't bring the future back.
Tell them niggas get off me. Chris, we all fed. Tim's, we all fed. Brim's, we all fed.
Yeah, we all fed. Is you still on that? Are you still making money? Cause you still on that. I don't give a fit up a bit out the way that you used to move, what you used to do. And I don't give a fit up a bit out the bitches that you used to screw, what your future do. And we don't really care what you used to say, unless that affects your future pay. I'm on the practice field running 2 a day, so I don't drop the ball when it's through my way. So I don't give a fit up.
Little Jay-Z and Drake coming off Jay-Z's new album. Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Aaron at Roberta's Restaurant with Tracy Kamens from GrandCrewClasses.com. A quick sponsor thank you to TechServe, specializing in Mac products on 23rd Street, and to our producer and engineer today, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener. So for those who are just joining us, we'll do a quick recap as to our previous segment, which I'll let Tracy lead into.
Mm-hmm. So we were discussing the various structural elements found in wine and, you know, talking more about what the sensations you get on the palate as opposed to aromas and flavors. So really talking about sweetness, acidity, tannin, and alcohol, and how those, particularly acidity and sweetness, interplay, but all of them really establish the structure of the wine, kind of like the structural, you know, framework of a house, really giving that quality to the wine, and really will permit it to age, you know, without good acidity, without some tannic structure, without, you don't necessarily need sweetness, but certainly the acidity, alcohol, and tannin are going to permit the wine to have some longevity.
Well, going back to the sweetness part, I think also when we think about sweet, we think about ripeness of fruit. So maybe that is a way to say there is an importance in that, not just the sweet part, thinking, you know, Riesling sweet or residual sugar sweet, mm-hmm. but the sweetness being ripeness of fruit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you certainly want to make sure that if you're thinking about putting a wine down to age or buying a wine at that's older vintage of it, you know, that there's going to be enough of the ripe fruit that remains beyond mm-hmm. The initial period of time from, you know, when it was first opened or first bottled, rather.
So when we think about wines that are bottle age worthy, those comparative to things that are made to be drunk young.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How do you discourse that with your students?
Well, I mean, the as I said, those elements, you know, really need to be there. Particularly, you know, we generally think of white wines as being fresh and fruity and aromatic, and those elements, particularly the aromatics and the fresh fruit, are going to fade with time. So for most white wines, they really don't have longevity, because what makes them such wonderful wines isn't going to be around in a couple of years. So, you know, certainly a year or two, they're going to be great and fresh. But if you wouldn't want to hold on to something like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc for several years, you know, they're right. Very well-made wines, but...
A very fine Riesling from 1966 that's made very well can very well stay.
Right.
Or, like as mentioned yesterday, we did the Mussard tasting. We had a 69 Blanc, which was just drinking phenomenal. You know, so those are the rare occasions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And for those people shopping, I'd say on a regular basis, they're looking for something to drink now.
Right. Yeah. And again, as I said, those really... What makes those wines so wonderful is that fresh fruit. So you want to enjoy them while they're young.
Mm-hmm.
The wines that we think of in terms of white wines that age, you know, definitely wines with a lot of residual sugar, a lot of sweetness, like a dessert wine like Sauternes,
mm-hmm.
Or certainly some of the Rieslings, particularly from Germany, that do have some residual sugar, and a lot more development will really add to their complexity.
Right.
And Chardonnay from Burgundy does tend to do very well over time. And of course has a little bit of tannin quality sometimes to it having been in aged in barrel.
Right, which I think is an important factor of aging.
Right.
So how is your thoughts in terms of how Bordeaux became so synonymous with bottle age worthy wines?
Well, I mean, certainly the better known Bordeaux, particularly the class growths, where you have 60% or higher on the Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a very tannic grape, as we mentioned, you know, definitely give that tannic structure to the wine and really can be, you know, too tannic at a young age, and you want to give the wine time to evolve to have those tannins soften. But beyond that, you know, you have, of course, the aromas and flavors of the wine, and you know, when a wine is young, those aromas are going to be much more fruit forward, a lot fewer of them. But as the wine ages, you're going to get more bottle bouquet. So a lot of the elements from the oak aging that are going to come out, the oak itself, it might not be as overpowering as just oak. It'll come out as maybe some spice, maybe some cigar box, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. cloves, or however it evolves. But then so many other things are going to be developing over time as well. And so the fruit itself might fade more to the background and not be as the first element that you would smell or taste. But you're going to get so many more elements coming through in terms of flavor profile. And that really is what makes older wines just so wonderful to enjoy, because they do have that complexity, and each sip can be a whole host of other aromas and flavors that you didn't get the sip before or the sip after.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in concrete terms, we're looking at alcohol and acid and the sugars that are present in the juice, which go into oak to start that aging
right.
process,
mm-hmm.
and how they extract elements from the oak, which then transform
right.
well, their aging mm-hmm. process.
Certainly. I mean, the obvious thing of when we think about aging wine in oak barrels is, of course, you're going to get oak. And, you know, a lot of people don't know, but the same chemical compound that's in vanilla beans is also found in oak. So you get vanilla very often with oak aging. But also, in addition to adding the oak and oak-related flavors and aromas, you're also, because the oak itself is somewhat porous compared to another vessel such as stainless steel, you're getting that exchange of oxygen very slowly over a period of time, but it is happening in terms of that evolving, the helping the wine to age and evolve because of that slow oxygenation that's going on because of the barrel aging.
And sure.
Certainly wines like Bordeaux that, you know, generally will have several years of oak aging will have that have started, and then the additional bottle age will allow the other elements to evolve as well, as we discussed in terms of the tannins becoming softer, but also the aromas becoming more evolved in terms of less fruit and more secondary characteristics.
So is in the bottle, the chemical reactions are continuing to evolve, and we get this other thing called sediment, which people are always under much curiosity about.
So, I mean, that's actually, you know, just obviously the pigmentation, the anthocyanins that are in the grape skins that give the wine its color are going to eventually, over time, fall out of solution and become sediment. And certainly not anything dangerous, but usually you want to decant a wine that has sediment, or at least pour carefully so you avoid getting that in the glass, because it's not pleasant, but it's definitely not dangerous, and it's not anything. It's, you know, and I think decanting is one of those things that there's so many proponents one way or the other, but everyone agrees that if there's sediment, that's a great time to decant the wine.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this interesting knowledge on bottle aging, wine aging, oak aging. And again, the name of the class that Tracy teaches is from Grand Cru Classes, called what again?
It's From Mystery to Mastery.
From Mystery to Mastery. Great, great title.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Erin.
And we'll sign off this afternoon from Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn, and we'll see you next week.
El antifaz que tu maldad